Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation is with Carrie Dominguez. Carrie's the chair of the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Well, Carrie, so far our conversation is focused on complaints in the private sector. I'm curious about the complaints in the federal sector and how that process goes.
Yes, Paul, EEOC has a dual responsibility, not only to the private sector charges, but also we're the ones that write the regulations and review the appeals process for the federal sector. We're not doing as well in that phase. We've made some improvements, but we're not doing as well. We still get about 23,000 complaints by federal employees annually, individuals who believe that they've been discriminated against. And if you conservatively cost those out, and the cost ranges depending on how long it takes, but it could be anywhere from $5,000 to $35,000 to process an EEO charge in the federal government, we're looking at hundreds of millions of dollars of taxpayers' money. And I recently held a commission meeting to look into that and find out what were some of the issues. And to a person, everyone was concerned about the delays. It takes over 420 days to settle a complaint, compared to 86 days if we mediate one in the private sector, or 171 days if we investigate it. Sometimes the appeals process and the review of that could take years. It's not uncommon to have complaints last 4 or 5 years. So we need to take a look at delayering and making sure that we can simplify the process. And one way to do that is to introduce mediation early on in the process. We've had such great success in the private sector that we believe that if we have a mediation process early on, once an employee comes in to talk about concerns or whatever they're experiencing in their offices, that may be a good opportunity to not only have EEO counseling, but also introduce mediation. So we're looking, and that's one of my major priorities this year, is to look for ways to streamline the federal sector complaint process. And so it's not as lengthy, so it's not as mixed. Oftentimes, a lot of the issues that are in that pool of complaints have nothing to do with EEO. It may have to do with maybe more of a union grievance, union-related grievance. It may be more to do with communications or bad blood between an employee and an employer. So we're trying to come up with some standards that really drive out the non-meritorious allegations and really concentrate on the ones that have substance.
The 5-point plan you described in the last segment laid out some broad management themes. How are you, or what type of performance measures are you using to measure the success of the 5-point plan?
We're using a variety of performance metrics. Of course, one of which we are constantly being measured again is how long it takes to process a charge. So looking for ways through technology and by building the expertise of our investigators to cut down the time that it takes is always an important metric. We're also looking to make sure that the satisfaction rate. We've gone out, particularly as it relates to mediation, to find out whether both the respondents and the charging parties are pleased with the quality of the service that they're getting from the commission and the quality of the process. And we've been pleased to see that we've had over 90% satisfaction rate when we use mediation. Another benchmark that we're trying, again, if we look at it, the fact that it takes on average 420 days to process a federal sector complaint, let's see if we can do it in 300 days and how can we work more closely with the agencies. The most important measure we now have is the president's management agenda metrics of getting to green in human capital, getting to green in the use of technology. And so we're working on our own getting to green standards. We're trying to get, for example, you can file. One of the things we're working on this year is filing complaints online so that you don't have to come into a brick-and-mortar building EEOC office, but you can actually do it out of the comfort of your home and being with commands and so on, and you can file that, and then having a hotline or some sort of a technical assistance desk to help with that. Another aspect of measurements that I think is important has to do with our own infrastructure. Our infrastructure, I mentioned we have 51 offices, but our infrastructure has not had a fresh look since the late 1970s. At a time where we're much more mobile, much more technologically oriented, people no longer go into, you know, I think about the banking, my banking background. You know, it used to be you have to go walk into a branch to deposit, and people are a little leery about ATMs, and now they go online banking. I said, there's no reason why we have to have people come into EEOC to file a charge. They should be able to do it in a variety of ways. They can come in if they want to, or they can use technology. So that's an important piece of it. And that would allow us to then distribute our investigators and mediators in a much more different way than they currently are. They currently are concentrated in pockets of within major cities and other areas where there's a large activity of charges. But that doesn't necessarily have to be that way. We can have a much broader presence throughout all 50 states if we, in fact, took full advantage of our technology. So that's an important one for us, getting to green and working closely with the Office of Management and Budget and the Office of Personnel Management in all of those components.
In terms of getting the complaint process online, was it just as straightforward as actually putting the forms and such on the internet, or are there other things about security and privacy that were only envisioned as being done in paper that now require changes?
All of those things. And you also have to remember a large bulk of our population of complainants are limited, our skills limited, oftentimes don't even speak English. So we have to be sensitive to that. And we have to make it easier for those that are proficient with technology and have access to it. But it has to do with confidentiality issues. It has to do with if, in fact, they want to mediate. It has to do with making sure that there's a firewall between our mediators and our investigators and how that information, once filed, how we're going to keep it and how we're going to use it from one function to the other is critical. So, yes, it requires we've got a number of attorneys looking at all kinds of issues relating to what's the best way and how to best instruct individuals if they're going to self-direct their own information processing, if they're going to be writing the allegations and so on. How can we best instruct them so they can be clear in what we need in order to do our work?
Earlier in our conversation, you talked about directing more resources to certain functions. I think you said 5% more. I'm curious, how are you linking resource allocation to performance as you look across the organization?
We're doing some of that. I'm not satisfied with where we are at the moment. Last year, we had a banner year. We just had a phenomenal year in terms of time, reduced times to process charges, the increased number of charges that we process, as well as the benefits that were collected for victims of discrimination. So it looks like in all points, we really did a phenomenal job. But we're still apportioning our resources sort of on an even basis, not so much on a needs-driven or where is the majority of the charges coming from or what are some of the issues that may be precedent setting. One of the critical roles of the commission is to identify issues that are novel or precedent setting or that help evolve case law and take those cases to litigation so that we can get some court rulings on it. We have not yet gotten our resource allocations to the point where we can be that flexible. It's still somewhat centralized. Over 90% of our resources are fixed expenses. They deal with salaries and rental leases, you know, brick and mortar type things. So we have very, very little funding for discretionary allowances. A little more this year for technology, but not as much as I would like in terms of redeploying some of, for example, if we can get mobile units and do this online application, then take the funding from rental leases and use that for more investigative work or more outreach work. Similarly, I think our ratio of employee to manager may be a little off kilter, and we need to take a look at that. We still have a somewhat hierarchical structure. Even as we rely on technology, I can now send an email to all my employees. I don't have to rely on my direct reports talking to their direct reports, talking to their direct reports, and all the way down the line. So we have enabling technologies that help us reach. But unfortunately, I don't think we're working on it, but I don't think our processes are where they should be to be able to redeploy those resources as quickly as we should.
Well, speaking of messaging, could you tell us about the Freedom to Compete public service announcements?
Freedom to Compete is an initiative that I launched shortly after I arrived at the commission, and the message was very simple. It's when you peel all the layers of the laws that we administer, be it American disabilities, age discrimination, when you peel all of them, what is it that it's all about? It's about the freedom to compete in the workplace on a level playing field without regard to race or color or religion. So we decided to go out and aggressively heighten awareness and identify opportunities to talk to individuals who see the commission as an enforcement, as a cop, and educate the public as to this is about everyone's rights. I think as a nation, the reason we have these laws is because as a nation, we value fairness in the workplace as well, as much as we value fairness in everything we do. And it's about that freedom to compete, giving people a chance to prove themselves and not to be saddled with prejudice or biases. And the freedom to compete is a way of capturing that, providing information to the public on the trends we're seeing, the ongoing biases and prejudices that we're still seeing, so that they can do some self-correction in their own. You know, we can't be boiling the ocean and covering all fronts. We have to engage in strategic alliances and partnerships, which we have done. The Executive Leadership Council, for example, is the first group that we partner with, and through them, we launched those public service announcements. We had individuals that helped identify spokespersons, and that was a very important partnership for us. Similarly, working with the Society for Human Resources Management, with the American Bar Association, their employment section, EEO subsection, we have a number of partners and alliances that we need to tap into to promote the concept of freedom to compete.
It's a good stopping point. Come back after the break with us as we continue our discussion of management with Kerry Dominguez of the EEOC. What role will the EEOC have in Homeland Security? We'll ask Kerry for her perspective when the Business of Government Hour returns.